Welcome to the Bookshelf Odyssey podcast. In this podcast, we talk about books, interview authors, and we discuss their journey to becoming published. Each one has a different but amazing story. My hope is to encourage people to keep reading good books and to help authors find their audience and inspire everyone in their journey, whatever that might be. Welcome to the Bookshelf Odyssey podcast. Welcome back to the Bookshelf Odyssey. My name is Art, and today my guest is author Lynn Gladner. She is an author, a writing coach, and the host of the Make Meaning podcast. Her first novel, Woman of Valor, debuted on September 26, 2023, and is a story about the courage to love the ordinary and seek satisfaction where you are, while shedding the need to please others. Lynn draws from her life experience as an Orthodox Jew for 10 years to allow the reader a glimpse into what that world looks like. Lynn, welcome to the Bookshelf Odyssey podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm starting my third season now, and I kind of got off to a slow start, but I'm really excited. I've got some authors lined up, and it's great to be back talking to folks like you.
Awesome. Congratulations. That's quite a track record.
Yeah. I heard that, you know, if you can get past that 7 or 8 episode mark, then you can get consistent. So we've made it.
Yay.
That's right. I like to start off asking, do you have a favorite book?
Oh, goodness. I mean, there's so many. I'm a voracious reader. And if you could see in my house, I have like stacks of to be read books. Mm-hmm. Some are for my podcast because I interview authors as well, but a lot of them are friends' books or books that I've been dying to read. I really loved the Outlander series by Diana Gabaldon, and I liked even more the Wilderness series by Sarah Donati. Those are historical novel series that I just got lost in. It was like being transported to another place and time, and I love when a book does that, when it takes you away. It's really cool.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Now, the first one, what was that first one you mentioned again?
Outlander.
Oh yeah, yeah. So that's the Outlander TV series and stuff.
Yeah, but the books are so much better.
That's what I hear. Yeah.
Yes.
I haven't watched it or read them. So
read the books. Don't watch the show. You know, the first season was good, but and I've watched all the seasons, but the books are so good. The writing is gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, a lot of books become popular for a reason, I guess. So
yes. So many.
Well, I love that you're a voracious reader. I'm in our bedroom right now, and you can see there's actually 4 bookcases all along my back wall here. And then I've got one more over in the corner. It's a smaller one. So
I think surrounded. I see a Louise Penny behind you. Am I right?
Yep. I've got, I think all of her books, stacked up there kind of.
Okay. It's a lot.
Spilling over. Yeah. She's one of my favorites.
So I spent a month this past summer in Nova Scotia, and I drove there from Detroit, and we stopped in Quebec, and I bought the one called Bury Your Dead. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've read that, but it takes mm-hmm. place at the Literary and Historical Society in Quebec, and that's where we bought the book. And I love to do that. I travel a lot, and I like to buy books about the place or buy local authors wherever I go so that I can better understand the place I'm visiting. And so my mom is a huge Louise Penny fan, but that was my first, and it was great. I loved it.
I haven't read all of them. There's maybe 2 or 3 of her recent ones I haven't gotten to yet, but I was hooked from pretty much her first or second book, especially that second one was kind of a gut punch. It was good, but a little bit of a sad ending, but I thought, oh, wow, this is just so, so good.
Cool. Yeah.
But yeah, I like reading mysteries, some science fiction, and I really enjoy classics, like Victorian classics as well. So I have kind of an eclectic taste.
Sounds like it. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
But I love your idea about going to a bookshop and buying a local author or a book about the place. I'll have to remember that. I get teased because when we go on vacation, I look for the nearest bookstore, you know.
Of course, why wouldn't you? You
know? Right.
So the problem is that I've started traveling like a month at a time. So, you know, when I spent a month in the summer of 2022 in the Highlands in Scotland, I brought books to read, but then I kept buying books. And so I mean, there's only so many I could take on the plane, you know, so that's kind of a problem too, is that when you spend a month somewhere, there's so many bookstores you're going to discover, and then you just have to buy the books, you know, mm-hmm. so it's a little bit of a sickness, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Although I just heard a podcast addressing that issue, and they said one thing you could do is have the bookstore just ship the book to your home. So
that's
it's waiting for you when you get there. And
that's true.
If you pay for shipping and everything, they said most bookstores would probably do that for you.
A good idea. I have to remember that.
I know, right? I'm like, oh, this changes everything.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. What are you reading? What have you read lately that you think would be worth picking up?
So I've been reading a few books by friends of mine who are also authors. So I just finished Rochelle Weinstein's What You Do to Me, which was phenomenal. I couldn't put it down. And my friend Lisa Pierce, her book, Love at 350 Degrees, that was also great. So those are two recent ones, but I'm also reading some nonfiction about Israel, given the state of the world and that I'm Jewish. I really wanted to understand some of the history better. And I've been to Israel a bunch of times, but I'm reading Noah Tishby's book, Israel, the Most Misunderstood Nation on Earth. And that's where I am. So some great women's fiction and some pretty serious regional history type of stuff. So yeah.
I've just finished, speaking of books by friends, on our BookTube channel or YouTube channel, you know, that follows books. One of the channels, her name is Katie Lumsden, and she just wrote a book called The Secrets of Hartwood Hall, mm-hmm. Which is kind of a homage to that Victorian Gothic story, mm-hmm. historical fiction. She's a big Victorian literature fan, and so she published her first book. And I just finished reading that, and that was really good.
Ooh, cool.
It's kind of in conversation with books like Jane Eyre and some of what the Brontes have written. So
yeah.
A lot of Gothic atmosphere, a lot of secrets hiding in the house, you know, all that classic stuff. So
yeah, wow, cool.
I just finished that. That's one I would recommend to folks. Now, are you someone who will read multiple books at once, or do you have to stay one at a time?
That's a good question. If it's a novel that really grabs me, then I just want to read that. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when I'm reading nonfiction books, I'm in a couple at once because it's kind of, you know, I write a lot of creative nonfiction on my own, but when I read, I really love to get lost in fiction. So if I'm reading a nonfiction book for learning or just to understand an issue or something, I need to do it in chunks. So yeah, there could be a couple stacked on the table, you know, as I go through it. So yeah.
Yeah. I usually have more than one going, and one time, I don't know if I just get distracted as a reader or what, but one time I realized I had about, I don't know, 10 books going. And
like, wow. That's a lot.
I've got, some are nonfiction, some are fiction, some are short stories, a couple audiobooks, you know, so there's variety, but I'm like, okay, I've got to cut back here. I kind of try to keep it manageable to about, you know, I'll read a couple at a time. But you know, like the Victorian novels, you can go through them fast, but they're much better if you read it slowly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can read a little bit of that in the morning and then have, a mystery in the afternoon or something. And
exactly.
Well, Lynn, let's talk about your writing journey. How is it that you became a writer?
So my mom said recently that I was 6 years old, so I'll take her word at that. I've always written. I used to carry a journal around when I was little and write stories and skits and poems. And I actually keep one. It's a corduroy journal from the 70s, and it's behind my desk. And I just keep it there to remind me who I've always been. So I was always a writer. Writing is how I make sense of things, how I figure out what I think about things. And I started my career as a journalist. And I actually started in high school as a journalist, not only in my school, but I freelanced for the local newspaper when I was in high school. Mm. And then I went to University of Michigan. I worked for the Michigan Daily. I freelanced for the Ann Arbor News. And I pursued a journalism degree. And so when I graduated from college, I moved to New York. I worked for a newspaper there. And then they transferred me to D.C., to their Capitol Hill Bureau, and I worked for a newspaper there. And the first 15 years of my career, I was writing as a journalist, newspaper articles, columns, magazine stories, things like that. And all the while I was writing books. So while this is my first novel that just came out, it's my ninth book. So I had two poetry collections, six nonfiction books. And the poetry collection started, my very first book was when I was 25 and I graduated from my MFA in writing program. And my manuscript, my master's thesis was a manuscript of poems. And a publisher picked it up. So I actually came to graduation with a box of books, which was really cool. So I've always written books on the side and then used writing in my career, but starting to write fiction or really to work on publishing fiction has been a big departure because not only am I writing the book, but I'm marketing it and looking to build a career on it and make money from it, which I really don't think I was trying to do with the other eight books. Mm-hmm. So it's like a definite pivot in my author career at this point.
Yeah. And then do you think you'll be doing more fiction then in the future?
Yes. My plan is to write a book a year for the rest of my life. So the next novel is already in deep revision right now and will come out in 2024. And so that's my plan is just to write book after book after book and just build a whole library of my work so that I am first and foremost an author and not just doing it on the side.
You know, as you said, you write to help you make sense of things. And it certainly feels like lately there's just a lot that we need to work through just globally, nationally, you know, locally. It's just, there's a lot happening. Yeah.
Existentially.
Yep. Yes. And then, you know, as a writer, what are some challenges you faced? And then conversely, what are some victories that you've seen?
Well, you know, I'm sure I've faced a lot of challenges. I mean, I submit essays for publication and I might have to submit it 10 different places before it gets accepted. But I think that I've learned that's just par for the course. That just is what you do. And I'm pretty scrappy. Like if I want an essay to be published, it's going to get published. Like whatever I can do, you know? And in terms of victories, like I feel like I've had great success with my writing. I've been published in major national magazines and newspapers. I've had, you know, like I said, 9 books. And I think for this book, for Woman of Valor, I really departed from my typical path of how to publish because my earlier 8 books were all published by independent publishers, small presses. And I made a conscious decision to do Woman of Valor myself. I created a publishing house for women over 40 with strong voices and put my book out there as part of that. And that was kind of daring because I, you know, the way I was trained, you didn't self-publish back then. And now it's way more accepted.
Yeah.
And I just decided to do that because I didn't want to compromise the story or the focus. You know, it's a very Jewish book. Not all of my novels will be, but this one in particular features a protagonist who's in an Orthodox community and she's living a religious lifestyle. And I think, a lot of agents just thought they couldn't sell it. It was like too Jewish or something, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a huge part of my author brand. Like I'm a really proud Jewish woman and I really want to create strong Jewish characters and I didn't want this book to either be like, oh, it's terrible to be religious. Cause there's lots of those books out there. You know, I wanted it to be a mostly happy book of a great experience in a world that most people don't know. And it was just really fun to do. So I feel like that was a challenge and a victory at the same time.
Yeah. So let's talk about Woman of Valor. I kind of gave a brief elevator pitch, I guess you'd call it, at the beginning. But take us into the story. What's it about? What's your message in it?
So the main character is Sally, and she becomes religious in Judaism by choice. She's in her early 20s. She lives in Chicago. And she grew up really not any religion and her mother was Jewish, but just they didn't really do anything. And she meets some people in the Orthodox world when she's working on a magazine article and loves it. And so when the book opens, you know, she's been married for 10 years, I think, or 8 years, and she's really happy. She's in love with her husband. She has 3 great kids, very passionate marriage, which is something you don't hear about in religious circles. And everything is great. And I did that deliberately, even though I'm not Orthodox. I was once, but I haven't been for a long time, and I still wanted to show the beautiful side of that community. And then her son is abused at his day school, and she and her husband respond differently to that. And at the same time, her ex-boyfriend tracks her down online and says, I never should have let you go. So there are all these things that come up, and she really has to answer some hard questions. You know, is this community, it's not as perfect as she thought. Does she want to stay? You know, what is her identity? And she has to make those choices. And I think that that's a powerful story, because most people don't really think that deeply about their identity. They just sort of fall into it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great tension of like, you know, well, what will she do? And how does she weigh and measure, you know, ultimately her decisions? Some people have called it suspenseful, and I think I can see that, you know. There's a lot of love in it, and there's a lot of food. I've heard that too from people, but that's true because she's always cooking and doing things with her kids and stuff like that. So there's some very domestic things, but then there's some suspense and relationship tension. And I think that keeps people reading. People have said that they read it in 2 or 3 days, which is really cool.
Did you look, I know you kind of hinted at this, but you're kind of looking into your own background a bit to bring in ideas to the story?
Well, I mean, I did spend a decade in the Orthodox community, so I did live in a more religious community than I live now, but I was never religious like Sally is. Like, it's a more religious community for her. So I know some things, but I had to still research a lot too. I mean, she's a runner. Running is a huge part of the book, and I hate running. I do other sports, but I am not a runner, you know?
I hear you.
I do have kids, and I love being a mom, and I love cooking for them and with them and always have. So maybe I pulled that from my life. But, you know, I think you write about some of what you know, and then you learn what you don't. And so there was a lot of research that went into this too. I don't live in Chicago. I really had to, you know, learn the street names and the stores and things like that. And so yeah, I think we always pull somewhat from what we know, but this is not about me at all.
Okay. So it's not like a veiled memoir or something.
No, not at all. Not at all. People ask that. You're not the first. So yeah.
If you could elaborate more even on what drove you to want to switch from writing nonfiction to going in a more fiction direction.
So it's something I've always wanted to do. And in fact, in the year 2000, I wrote a novel, the first novel that I'd ever written. And it will probably never see the light of day, you know, but
I hear that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. But I love reading fiction so much that I was like, can I do this? And I think that I needed to mature in my voice and in my writing skills to, get to the point of writing a book that was publishable. I did take that first novel and 5 years later revised it, sent it around to like some friends who are writers, got a lot of critical feedback, and it went back in a drawer, you know? Mm-hmm. So I've tried to write fiction for a long time. This book, I started in 2011 and got 60 pages in and just sort of, you know, stalled. And I think I didn't know where this story was going. And I don't know, I just put it aside and was working on my business and raising my kids and everything. But I came back to it in 2021 and I changed it significantly. But I thought the bones were good, and that experience has taught me to plan out my novels as opposed to just writing by the seat of my pants, and so that's been a good thing. So I think it'll be a lot easier to write novels from here on out because I can plan them out, and then I know where I'm going, which is really great.
Great. Yeah, so you're not a pantser, you're a plotter, huh?
Not anymore. I've converted.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's see. I like to wait to the last minute to do things, so...
Usually me too, but it didn't bode well the first time around, so I'm not going to repeat that, you know?
Right. You usually just end up frustrating everyone else who's depending on you, so.
Right, yeah.
What would the message of your book be? You know, what do you hope people take away from this?
I hope that they have insight into a community they may not know and understand it a bit better. I hope people see this as a story about a strong woman who makes choices that you might not expect, but that you like her all the more because she's not doing the typical thing, you know? And, you know, I do hope that there's an overall message of, you know, love is the most important thing with everything. So whether it's parent child or friendship or, you know, passionate love of community, like just that's really what glues us together. I hope that comes across too.
In the email I got, Allison, is she like your agent or?
I hired her to do some podcast pitching. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the story is about the courage to love the ordinary and seek satisfaction where you are, and while shedding the need to please others. I mean, that just spoke to me. So I'm looking forward to reading the book. I haven't had a chance to yet, but okay. Yeah, that line, that idea is something I think we can all identify with, you know, that how much of our life do we waste or misuse trying to, you know, doing things just for the sake of pleasing others and hoping that validates us in some level.
Yeah. I think that, you know, Sally makes a choice to be religious, which a lot of people don't. And when you're part of a community like that, there's an expectation that everybody follows the same rules. And, you know, especially in the Orthodox world, like you want to keep kosher so that people feel comfortable eating in your house, and you should interpret it the same way. So there's no variation, and there are certain modes of dress that are more modest and things like that. There's a lot of expectation from the community. And yet I wanted to create a character that was independent and, thought for herself, but fit into the community and found friendships and could still be part of it. I think that's a huge tension in the real world. You know, like, do you conform and follow what everybody else does, or do you think for yourself, and can you still be a part of the community? And I think that that's something that a lot of people face. You know, like, if you don't exactly walk the walk, are they still going to be your friends? Mm. And so I hope that that's an issue that people think about when they read the book, for sure.
Yeah, and I love the idea too of you know, loving the ordinary, because so often we can just overlook those things, whether it's, you know, the same walk you take every day and you just get used to it. And then you actually just stop a minute and think, like, look around you and see the beauty that's there, you know, that it can really encourages you to slow down and enjoy your life more.
I think you're right. And, you know, like, she lives in a suburb. And she has little kids and, you know, she's making tuna casserole for dinner. Like, these are not momentous things, you know?
Right.
But she's really happy in that. And there's a sense of contentment. I also think that, you know, being Jewish my whole life, and I think religion does this for us, but I know Judaism the best because that's what I was raised with. And so much of our observances have to do with elevating the ordinary, like noticing the moment or the day or, you know, just giving thanks for what is around us instead of looking for something huge, you know, like it could just be ordinary, but it can be really extraordinary at the same time. And so I think, I mean, I'm not religious anymore, but I think that's the beauty, at least in my religion and maybe other religions too, is that we elevate moments by noticing them more.
Yeah. We discovered that with when our kids were young, you know, you can get so caught up in just chasing them around the house or the crazy insanity that comes with having toddlers.
Yes.
It's like, wait a minute. Have I actually had a meaningful interaction with my kids today, or have I just been angry at them for something, you know?
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah. I wanted to also ask a little bit more about this publication company you started. You said it was called Strong Voices?
No, it's called Scotia Road Books.
Oh, okay.
And it's for women over 40 with strong voices.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
Yeah. It's a hybrid press. Which means that the writer does pay some money up front and then they're shepherded through the publication process. And we will do historical fiction, women's fiction or contemporary fiction, and creative nonfiction or memoir. And so even though I have an MFA in poetry, we're not publishing poetry at this point, but I just think that the more opportunities we have to get our voices out there, the better. And, it's, you know, hybrid publishing has really come a long way, and it's a great middle ground between traditional and self-publishing. And just to sort of give the system and the, you know, sort of like the whole process, make it easier for authors. And so, I have a lot of fun doing all of that. And I love working with the authors on helping them build their author brand, envision how this book is going to hit the world, who needs to hear it. And put together something that is really compelling too. So, I think also women over 40 with strong voices. There's a lot of us and people are not always embracing. And so I think we need to have that sort of, community and support so that we don't feel like we're, alone in this world or that our voices don't matter.
when I started doing this, it was kind of a, it's basically a hobby, you know, and I was hoping to talk to authors and all that, but then I really started getting contacted by a lot of authors like mm-hmm. yourself mm-hmm. that are going non-traditional routes to publication. And it's just incredible what is available for people today to get published.
Yes. It's really, I think we need to remember that publishing is a business. It's an industry. Mm-hmm. So they're going to make decisions based on what can make money for them. So that's an agent or it's a publishing house, and they should. I mean, if they're going to invest in an author, they want to make sure that they can recoup their costs and then some. So it is a business proposition. And I think we forget that. And one of the things that I really have been working a lot with authors on, you know, because I've had a marketing company for 16 years and I teach a lot. I teach a lot of writers, writing classes, but also on author branding and marketing, because regardless of how you publish these days, you have to be prepared to help market your book. So even if you go with, you know, Simon & Schuster or HarperCollins, you're going to kick in some of your own resources and time to be marketing your book, because it's just not, they're not going to do everything for you anymore. It just doesn't work that way. So I think we all have to look at it as, this is the business of me and my voice, and who's going to love your book more than you? So any way you choose to publish is fine, as long as you are committed to working on the business of your writing and marketing your book. And the other thing too is that, and this is true in traditional publishing, but it's true, you know, for authors, there's what such a thing as writing one book, because you always wanted to write a book and you got it done and it's out there. That's great. But if you want to make money as an author, you have to write book after book after book. And that's true for a publishing house. They want to see that you have longevity and you have a career ahead of you. And it's not just a one hit wonder, but also for you, there's like research that says that, I think if you hit the 5-year mark, and you keep putting out books, that's when you start to turn a corner and you start to make money from your backlist and from the new ones. And so you really have to be in it for the long haul. And I think that your publishing decisions should take that into account.
And like you said, I can't blame a company for wanting to make money. You know, I mean, that's what they do. But I love that it people that, you know, and I've talked to a few that, you know, they knew, you know, this book is not going to be on a bestseller list. You know, this is a very niche topic, but it's my passion and my story, and I want to get it out. Yeah. And they find readers. And that's kind of what I hope to do, is to help people find authors and readers find each other. So.
Well, I hope you do. That's a great goal. I love it.
Yeah.
You're like a book matchmaker.
There we go. Yeah. There we are. Now I'm going to be singing Matchmaker, Matchmaker, you know, from Fiddler on the Roof.
In the theme of this very Jewish book. Thank you.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then do you have any advice for someone who's just starting out as an author or wants to be a writer?
Yeah, I think, first of all, you got to write, period. You're a writer if you write. But you need community. It's a very isolating art. And so, you know, I offer a free monthly write-along every month that people can join on Zoom and write in community. I give prompts, but people can also work on what their project is. And that's usually the first Saturday of the month, so they can sign up on my website, lynngaladner.com, and join the write-along. But there's like classes out there, both that I teach and others. There's writing centers and writing events, and like just surround yourself in the world of writing. Go to things, meet people. Because you can't do it alone, you know? So, I mean, go on a writer's retreat, go away to write and commune with other writers for a few days. Like, that's a really fun thing to do. So, that's what I would say. If you're going to be an author or a writer, you want to just immerse in that world and surround yourself with other writers, because there will be moments that you doubt yourself, or am I any good, or is anyone going to read this? And that's when you need somebody to say, yes, keep going. And other writers will do it for you.
Yeah. You know, you can get a manuscript and you can just work on it, always trying to fix it. You got to wait till it's perfect, and it'll never reach that point.
Right.
So sometimes you need that community to say, hey, it's done. Put it out there.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. Real quick. What's your podcast about?
Yeah. The Make Meaning podcast. I started it in 2018. Mm-hmm. And I really started it to see how people find meaning and purpose in work and in life. And I started it when my dad was diagnosed with a fatal leukemia. And so we didn't know if he'd make it to his 80th birthday. And he did. And the podcast aired, first episode was an interview with him on his 80th birthday. And then I was fortunate enough to, on the 1 year anniversary, his 81st birthday, do another conversation with him. And unfortunately, we lost him 6 months later. But that's how I started it. And over the years, it's morphed to focus on the niche that I'm working in at the time. So there's been a lot of episodes about entrepreneurs and educators and things like that. But now it's exclusively about authors and publishing. So I feature a lot of authors and different conversations about writing and publishing too.
Yeah, I'm going to take a listen, I think.
Awesome.
I'm kind of a podcast addict, I guess. So
get me to it. Yay.
All right. So if I'm not reading, I'm listening to a podcast usually. So
that's like a perfect life, Art. It really does.
Yeah. I love it. Well, Lynn, thank you so much for coming on and talking about your work and your journey. What's coming up for you that you'd like to promote or share?
Yeah. So I lead two writers retreats every year. And in 2024, every year I leave one to Mackinac Island in between the two Michigan peninsulas, but mm-hmm. I'm also leading one in the Redwoods of Northern California in October of 2024. So right now people are claiming spots and it's filling up. And my next novel will be out in 2024 as well. And I'm almost done with that. It's done, but I'm in revisions right now. So I'm really excited to get working on that too. And I teach a lot of writing classes. So you can find out all the things I do at lynngaladner.com. And I'd love to hear from people. So that's my stuff.
All right. Yeah. Now, are you writing, what genre do you write in? Is it just like fiction or?
I guess you'd say women's fiction.
Women's fiction. Okay.
Whatever that phrase refers to, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's contemporary. It's got some literariness to it. So
sure.
Something around that melding, you know?
Sure. Yeah. The- like, it's not like a science fiction zombie horror.
Nope.
Mashup. Okay.
In the next novel, there's a little magical realism, I will say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's always fun to come across. I like that.
Yeah. Yep.
Great. All right. Well, Lynn, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And folks, I'll have links to her website and things in the show notes you can check out. So Lynn, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Bookshelf Odyssey podcast. You can check out the show notes to find out all the information, links, and books that we referenced in today's episode. If you'd like to help support the show, I'd love for you to share on your social medias, tell your bookworm friends, and help us get the word out. If you'd like to help out in a financial way, there are links in the show notes. You can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com. You can find all episodes at bookshelfodyssey.com. And please follow us on my social medias. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Follow us there for more bookish content. And so until next time, happy reading, everyone, and take care.